Hey everybody, this is Catherine Spires, and listen, I am so tired these days, and then you combine that with the fact that Smart Mouth has gotten a bunch of new listeners lately, and I figured, why not do some reruns of some of my favorite episodes? And for those of you who already heard it, maybe you'll enjoy hearing it again. So I also wanted to share the news that I have started a podcast network. It is called Table Cakes Productions. You can check it out at tablecakes.com. That's like cakes on the table. Table cakes. But it's not all about food. The goal of the company is actually to have at least one podcast that would correspond to every section of a newspaper. So we're going to have business, food, the outdoors, sports, entertainment. And one of those entertainment podcasts is hosted by Sam Pancake. And Sam Pancake was the guest on this episode talking about various Southern desserts. But now he started his own podcast. It is called Sam Pancake Presents the Monday Afternoon Movie. You can find it on all of whatever podcast players that you use to listen to podcasts. And the concept of it is that Sam Pancake sits down with his friends, who are usually pretty famous, and they talk about made-for-TV movies from the 70s. It's hilarious. And you can actually usually find most of the movies on YouTube, so you can watch along too, which is cool. The latest episode of Sam Pancake Presents the Monday Afternoon Movie is about an early Sally Field movie, and the guest on that episode is Sally Field's son. Everyone go check out Sam Pancake Presents the Monday Afternoon Movie, and in the meantime, listen to this episode. Thanks! Everybody, welcome back to Smart Mouth, the podcast where we talk to our favorite people about their favorite foods. And this week we have on the show Sam Pancake. He's an actor and a comedian, and he's that guy from That Thing.
That's true.
Yeah. You've been in so much stuff.
Yeah.
Every commercial.
Lots of commercials.
Every sitcom.
Lots of sitcoms.
Yeah.
Yeah. As I was telling you earlier, there's just so many things, and I get stopped, or when people meet me, they're like, what do I know you from? And you have to go down the list. That's why I'm grateful for IMDb now.
Right.
Because if they really push it, or I'm feeling like a bit dickish, I'll be like, my name is Sam Pancake, go to IMDb and you'll see.
And once they know your name, they'll remember it.
Hopefully, yeah.
Yeah.
And it is my real name. I always have to make sure and mention that. I didn't make it up to be wacky, even though it's pretty perfect that I'm on a food podcast.
Right? It's totally perfect. I did a million years ago thought that you were making it up, but that's how I remembered it too.
Good.
Because I remember on Love Spring International, I was like, Pancake. Yes. By the way, Love Spring International is one of my favorite shows ever.
Thank you.
It's got so many amazing people on it, but it was on Lifetime.
They were trying to rebrand and start something new. This was in 2006, and it didn't quite work, I guess.
Yeah.
But they, again, as we were discussing earlier about something, another project, it would totally now be on Hulu or Netflix.
Absolutely.
And it would be great. It's a different world. So I'm up for a reboot, if anyone else is.
I'm sure they all are. It's like all these people who are still doing funny stuff.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
And the other project in question was Kitchen Confidential. Now, here is your connection to food.
That's true. And we did that. I was on. We did that in 05, and we shot 13 episodes. They only aired 4, which was there was one of those situations where one president at Fox greenlit the pilot, and it was her baby. And then new president came in over the summer, and then he didn't like it, so he had it canceled, and just didn't really give it a chance. But
such a bummer. It was such a good show.
Yeah, thank you. It was Darren Star who did Sex and the City, and it was supposed to be the male version of Sex and the City.
Right,
you know?
Which, as we discussed, was never going to work on network TV anyway. Again,
true.
All these shows that were like only like 5 years ahead of their time that could have done so well on the streaming and whatnot.
Story of my life.
Oh, man.
Meet, boop, bop. But we ate a lot on that show. That's one thing I will say about Kitchen Confidential. I gained so much weight because not only do we have amazing craft services who actually would ask us, the one woman would ask me because I didn't have as much to do, so I had a lot of downtime. So I was sassy gay waiter who would say like 5 things an episode, but worked every day still, which was nice.
Yeah.
But she would say, what kind of cake do you want me to make this week? And I remember like I was obsessed at that time with all these I don't know if they have these anywhere else, but in the South, they would have these cookbooks from churches where all the ladies would put in their recipes, pies, cakes, etc. And I had a roommate who passed away, and I inherited all these cookbooks of his, and he had a bunch of those from Huntsville, Alabama.
Oh my gosh.
And I was obsessed with making a 7-Up cake.
Oh my gosh.
Or a Coca-Cola cake or a Mountain Dew cake. They had all the cakes like that, which I'd had when I was little. That's my accent's coming back that I'm talking about.
Yeah.
But so she would make those for me.
Would you bring her the cookbooks, or would you just say what you wanted?
I would say it, and she would just find it, on the whatever primitive internet we were using in 2005. But then also we had to eat a lot on camera because there were the caterers for meals that we ate as human beings, as actors. Mm-hmm. And then there was craft service, which was amazing. And then they had the chefs who made all the food on the show. Cause one of the things was everything you see is edible. So the extras, we actors, we were always eating the food that you saw. It wasn't styled. It was styled, but it wasn't like sprayed with varnish and all the other things they do, or putting those little steam pellets in to make it look like it's steaming like they do in commercials.
Oh,
so
okay.
We ate a lot.
So it was like they would prepare, you would have actual cooks creating food. So edible food, was it good food?
It was good. It was always really good. These women were amazing. I forget who they were, but we had the fake kitchen on the Fox lot, which was in the same soundstage they filmed Valley of the Dolls on, which is a gay baby. Very excited.
Yeah.
But they had the fake kitchen set, which was all operational, and those boys would make things. The boys meaning Bradley Cooper and John Cho and Nikki Brendan and John Francis Daly and the other chefs.
Mm-hmm.
And then off right outside of the fake kitchen, the show kitchen, was the actual kitchen they used to make the food.
Okay, interesting. So then they'd bring it in, you'd do the scenes as much as you needed to, and then was it like a free-for-all with the food?
Sometimes. I remember one scene that sticks out in my mind, me and the other waiters who were extras, but they were always the same extras, so it was nice, so we got to know each other. Mm-hmm. But we had to just pounce on top of this big bowl of duck confit and just eat it like crazy people. And I remember doing that for a really long time, just eating like forks and forks all out of the same bowl. We were all like, is anyone sick? Hope not. Here we go again.
Okay.
And take two, like eat. And I remember on some commercials I've done, there was no spit bucket because you had to get the whole shot. I mean, maybe later you could spit things out, but I remember it being really good.
Interesting. That's cool that they brought in good food. I guess it probably helps with the acting if you're actually enjoying. Because the restaurant in the TV show was supposed to be amazing.
Really
have amazing
good
food.
Yes. Like Anthony Bourdain's. And it was kind of part of the cachet of the show. When it came out and was very well reviewed, and they really thought it was going to be, the next big thing. They wanted it to be, top notch all the way.
Right.
And you can still get it on people. I still get checks for $1.298, so it's playing somewhere.
Someone's watching
it. Yeah. And I especially chefs or waiters come up to me at different places and get like, oh my God,
really?
Kitchen Confidential, it meant so much to me. I still watch it, so that's good.
Yeah.
That's the nice thing about because things didn't used to have so much of an afterlife.
Mm-hmm.
But damn girl, I still get my 18-cent checks for wings that I shot in 1990. Someone's watching it.
Yeah.
Well,
that's great. You can just live off that.
And then plus the friends residuals are not shabby, and I only did two of them. So that's nice.
So you're kind of like a meat and potatoes guy.
I am. I love a steak. I love fried chicken. I grew up in West Virginia, in rural West Virginia, and it was very beef. It was very pork. It was very, I loved fried chicken. My mother was a really good cook. There were six kids in our family, and my father demanded, he's just, what a great guy. We had to have, my mother made a full on homemade from scratch meal for dinner every night.
Wow.
Except for Sunday when my daddy would sometimes cook and we have breakfast for dinner and he would make pancakes we always called pancakes hot cakes, I guess, not to
confuse ourselves
like cannibals, but they were always called hot cakes where I grew up. And my father, we discovered years later when my sister Laura and her husband, who's from here, my sister grew up in West Virginia, but she lives now here in Encino with her husband, who she met in Encino. And we were all, and they're vegetarian, and still are. And we were all back there years ago, like in the early thousands, and Daddy was making pancakes, and I was like, and they were eating them up. And I was like, Daddy, what is your secret ingredient? These are so good. He's like, bacon grease. At which point my brother-in-law and sister were like,
But if something's so really good, it's usually bacon grease.
It has to be. Yeah.
Yeah.
It is. I was watching the Great British Baking Show, which is a food competition show I do watch and love.
That one you like.
Some I don't. Some I do. But they were making they had Tudor Week, and they were making all those crusts with lard.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh. And I've even seen on the farm lard being made, and it's not attractive.
The rendering and all that?
The rendering and all of it, yeah.
Ooh.
So what I was saying, where I grew up was we had pigs a few years for 4-H projects, and we had a horse and stuff, but our cousins farmed and a lot of people around us farmed, and the property we lived on, where my mother still lives, was called Mill Meadow, and it was kind of a non-working farm, but there were, okay. We had fresh vegetables, we always had a vegetable garden.
I think that we call that a hobby farm. Is that an okay term to use?
I think so, yeah. It's, in fact, the property is now for sale because my mother's moving into a smaller house.
Mm-hmm.
And I hadn't heard that term until the realtor, my cousin, was saying it could be a hobby farm. And I'm like, it's perfect for a hobby farm.
Okay, yeah. A little bit of everything.
A little bit of everything. Yeah. And you won't make a living, probably. It's right. Mostly for a hobby.
Right.
But it's a beautiful property.
Did you like growing up in West Virginia?
I like that I did grow up in West Virginia. I like what it gave me. And I'm not just saying this because it's a food podcast, but I love the food.
Mm-hmm.
It was an outdoorsy life. It was very athletic. We lived on a river. My father hunted. I hunted as a kid. It was a lot of things that I participated in, but weren't really my joy.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to be, God, what a plastic little child. I wanted to be in the most artificial, plasticky, glitter, you know, urban. I knew I wanted to live in Hollywood. I knew I wanted to be an actor, like, right off the bat.
Really?
Oh, yeah. From the jump, I was like, saw Mary Poppins in the theater in, like, a re-release, seriously. And I was like, that's for me.
Interesting.
Yeah. So, but the food, my God. Not only was my mother was also, my father didn't like to have any, like, store-bought cookies or cakes in the house. And though, other than the occasional Oreo or Girl Scout cookie,
mm-hmm.
My mother still makes amazing chocolate chip cookies. She gave me her, like, not really secret recipe, but just what she does to
it.
Which
what
is,
does she do?
It's more brown than white sugar. She redoes the brown sugar ratio.
That is such a good tip.
Yeah. And they're crispy. Or they're right between crispy and chewy in this way that I've never had anywhere else in my life.
Gosh.
And I like all kinds of chocolate chip cookies.
Mm-hmm.
And she makes amazing brownies. This is all from scratch, mind you. She would make her pie crust from scratch. As she's gotten older, she doesn't do this as much, but she used to always see, what do you want me to make for you? She also makes this stuff that I've never had recreated, which is an oatmeal raisin cinnamon bread, which it's like a swirl bread with a really hard but like tasty crust. And it's very like a rustic bread, but it's a swirl, mm-hmm. like a Swiss roll with just the best like sugar, cinnamon, raisin goo throughout. Oh my God, I'm getting hungry thinking about it.
Your mom sounds like an amazing cook.
She really was really good, especially, and every once in a while there would be a you know, a sour note at the time. Because I remember one time, this is mean for me to even say, because mostly it was amazing, but meaning whenever there was like something that was off, like I remember one time eating chicken and biscuits that she had made, and there was a little bit of the string from the chicken in it still, and just like freaking out about it. But like, this is a woman who made, you know, from scratch, fresh meals every night for 8 people. Not to mention breakfast. And my daddy insisted, like, we had to have a hot breakfast 3 times a week. We could only have cereal 2 times. My father was really fucking controlling as I think about it.
Yeah,
and he was really into food. He still is. He's in a nursing home, but he, like, is obsessed with food.
Oh.
To the degree that it might be, like, an OCD thing or something.
Oh, gosh.
He's got a lot of problems. Now, my mother's mother, my maternal grandmother, my grandmother, Lecky, was also an amazing cook and baker.
Mm-hmm.
And my grandfather, my mother's father, this is probably why my mother was just used to it, was the same way. Everything was from scratch. My grandmother, Lecky, my mother's mother, made the bread from scratch. And they weren't like country people. They lived in this quote-unquote city, which was Huntington, on a lovely tree-lined street in a big brick house. It wasn't like, they did okay, but it wasn't, it was not a neighborhood, I think, where everyone else was making all the bread from scratch.
Right, right.
My grandmother would make this bread in a coffee can. And I don't even know the recipe. I wish I had it, but I don't. But it was the best bread I've ever had in my life. And after Thanksgiving, she would just make these big slabs of, like, mayonnaise and turkey on this bread. And it sounds so white person and bland, but it was really good.
No, it's the turkey sandwich thing after. You grew up eating well.
I did. I did eat really well. And it's funny because my siblings, all of them, have worked either as chefs or are really good cooks.
Oh, okay.
And I didn't get that somehow. And I've been in relationships where we've cooked together, mm-hmm. and I've done turkeys for Thanksgiving with friends. Mm-hmm. I'm live alone now. And I don't cook a lot, but right. I love to eat out because it's a single thing now of like, what am I going to make that it's, you know.
Cooking for one is a hassle.
It's a hassle.
Yeah. More hassle than joy at the end.
I think so. And like, I have a really great situation. You know where I live. It's this really great guest house and it's a wonderful situation, but I also don't have a dishwasher.
Oh,
and it's the first time I haven't lived. It's the first time I have not lived with a dishwasher or a fireplace.
Oh, gosh, you're really slumming it.
Most of my adult life, there is a pool, however,
and
plenty of parking, which as we all know, that's really what matters.
Yes. You do take advantage of that pool.
Yes, I do. So, yeah, I was raised on really good food. My mother would make me this really good custard pie that I loved. That was my kind of request. And I remember my grandmother would make the best. She would make a chocolate pecan pie, which I've never seen matched in my life or tasted, you know, the match of it in my life. And she would also make this really good peanut butter pie.
Ooh.
And this was the South, of course, so there was lots of, like, sugar.
Right.
And we also, the one thing I do make, my like, dish I bring at, you know, to Thanksgivings or Christmas or Easter's is corn pudding. My grandmother's corn pudding.
Yes.
Which, as you know, in the South, there's, like, it's one of those things, is it a vegetable or a dessert?
Yeah.
It's both.
I have a friend from North Carolina who brings it to Friendsgiving every year. And I'd never had it before.
Yeah.
Until I met people from outside the West Coast, because I've lived on the West Coast my whole life.
Yeah.
So I was very limited. And then I discovered through her corn pudding. And it's the best thing I've ever had in my life, but I don't always want it with the main course. It's like I want to save it to the
end.
That's
true. Yeah. That's true. Because it's very dessert-like.
Yeah.
We ate it in the mix with everything else, with maybe a very sweet marshmallow covered with, you know, cornflakes,
the yams.
Yams, sweet potato. And then speaking of Thanksgiving, my mother, and she probably still does, would make this oyster casserole. It's the only way I can eat oysters because I don't like fresh oysters.
Mm-hmm.
But it's this big, like, Ritz cracker topped. I don't even know. It's almost like a spoon bread. Like oyster casserole thing.
Yeah.
But my grandmother's recipe, which I still make and my mother makes, is a sweet version. It's so much sugar and milk and eggs.
Wait, of the corn pudding?
Corn pudding. I'm sorry. Yes, I'm sorry.
I thought you meant the oysters.
Corn pudding.
I was almost very upset.
My brain, which is even worse this weekend than usual, and I told you why earlier, we don't need to go into it, just haven't eaten in a couple days, not the top of my game health-wise, but I'll be fine. So my brain is a little bit all over the map in general, so it's going to be even worse today. But the corn pudding, there are different versions. I've made Martha Stewart's version, which is, of course, a more savory, you know, Martha.
Well, it has
less
to be
sweet,
quote unquote, elegant. So it's probably more balanced flavors. Which, you know, sometimes you don't even want that.
Yeah. And I've also made the Paula Deen version. This is before the bad news about Paula, who I used to adore, and it was just so simple. It was literally like cream corn and sour cream and mayonnaise and it's one of those things you can eat like four bites and you're like, oh, I feel like I ate just a lot of condiments mixed together somehow.
Yeah.
But still super satisfying and with the right mix of like fried chicken and green beans and bacon or whatever.
Well, I love that you are Southern and a lover of Southern food because we're going to talk about pies.
Yum.
And I really feel like the Southeast is where dessert culture, home cooked desserts, like that culture is the strongest there in all of the U.S.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
If we can talk about the history of pie a little bit.
Oh, tell me all about it.
I mean, it's probably sort of universal putting food in a carb container.
Yes.
That happens.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't it?
It better happen. It wants me happy.
Right, exactly. There's records of the Egyptians, the Greeks, the Romans, they all did that. Although they were usually savory.
Right.
And the crust was just the delivery vehicle. It wasn't meant to be eaten.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, and it was usually just flour and water.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Very simple.
And part of it was just preserving the food. So when you think about it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Interesting.
You can do whatever you can to preserve something when it's uncooked, and then you're like, I really got to cook this or I'm going to lose it. So then you cook it, and then you can keep preserving it in this flour and water cover.
Interesting.
Yeah.
It's interesting how, And I've been to, you know, and I've been to England, and I also, like I said, the Great British Baking Show. There's some savory pies are so big in mm-hmm. England, and my family, pancake's a German name, but like it's all, there's some Scots Irish and English, but it's all this very whitey white. My sister did that 23andMe thing. It's like you could basically said you couldn't be whiter. There's right. not even any German blood. I mean, white in terms of like waspy English.
Yeah.
And so it's interesting to me how all of. And my family has been in that county since the 1730s, the pancakes. That's why the name was not weird growing up because people knew it. And it was von Kuchen, a German name. But my point is how to the South, there are so few, there aren't savory pies.
Yeah.
There's not like, a culture of savory pies,
really
unlike
not.
England.
Yeah.
But there's a giant culture of sweet pies.
That's right. That's right.
Thank the Lord.
And it really was America that came up with sweet pies.
Yeah.
Because they were a big, big, big deal in England.
Yeah.
And then even coming over, you know, on the boats, preserving the food.
Exactly.
But then in America, they got into the fruit game.
Probably because the fruit was better here, especially in the South.
Yes.
That must be at so many more peaches and plums
yeah.
and apples. And I grew up in apple country.
Okay.
There were a lot of orchards. They've kind of died out, sadly. But I grew up going to the Apple Butter Festival. And my mother makes an amazing apple butter, as everyone did. And this is so random, and it's off the pie tip, but like... Did you ever have tomato preserves?
I've actually had them at Squirrel, which is that extremely trendy restaurant.
Down the street.
Yeah.
Well, the funny thing is, I grew up on them, and I grew up around them. I didn't like them, mm-hmm. but both my grandmothers and my mother made tomato preserves coming out of the windows. Like, it was a big thing then. And then it just died off, and I haven't seen them for years until I've seen it, like... On menus at, like, little fancy, funky, hipstery places.
Yeah, because a lot of the cool places right now are sort of rediscovering making everything from scratch.
Right, right.
You'll see it, I think, on a lot of fancy breakfast places where instead of ketchup or what have you, they do tomato preserved tomato jam.
Interesting.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. These things come and go.
Yeah, they do. It's interesting because, yeah, but all my grandmother, both my grandmother, well, my grandmother pancake was like, she would say she made things, but really her help made it. She's like, do you like that? I made this. And like, no, your help made it. Your
oh
maiden
my goodness.
Made it. That was that side of the family.
Right, right. The fancy side. Well.
Yeah, they were both, both sides had their fanciness and their down and their like not fanciness. I guess they were kind of, here's the thing. Yeah, for West Virginia, they were both fancy.
Got it.
Yeah.
Got it. It's all relative.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if you had help. You, yeah.
Right. That's pretty nice. So, speaking of sweet versus savory, there was some mention in ancient Rome of sweet pies, but those were rare. But there was a sweet cheese and honey pie that was called placenta.
What?
I know. That was the word for it, was placenta.
Taken from the placenta of a womb? Or
no,
is it just a word in general that I only know through womb work?
I think that this placenta came first.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
I guess if we went to the root word, I wonder what that would be like, I don't know.
Mush or something.
Place?
Oh,
do we know?
God, anyone? I almost just made myself sick. I shouldn't bring up placenta on my food
on
podcast.
A pie themed night? I don't know.
But here's the thing. There's this like history of weird words to describe crusted items. For
really?
Instance, this one isn't as disgusting, but it's kind of upsetting. In Great Britain, what they didn't say crust, they said coffin.
Oh, that's, you know, what with a bubonic plague culture, I guess it was they took it a lot more lightly.
Yeah.
When, you know, people were dying
humor.
In the streets, you know, like coffin, crust, six of one.
Exactly. So it was called a coffin in England where this great pie culture is. They weren't calling it that yet. I think because they tended to actually have a more of an oblong shape than the perfect circle.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yes, that's true. When you think of those, some of those pies like shepherd's pie and stuff.
I suppose. I still think it's really weird, but... I don't know what happened, but it was during the American Revolution that Americans started saying crust.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And didn't crust also mean, that word meant, not like cheeky, but there's the word crusty, meaning you're like an old, you know, brittle person, but then like you've got some crust. You know that word?
I don't know that usage of it.
I need to look it up. I will later.
Okay.
Listeners, maybe you could write in to Catherine and say,
yeah,
like you've got your crust. Like something like that.
We would love to hear about it for sure. Maybe it's just like an East Coast or Southern thing that
I think it's an English thing.
Oh, well,
Michelle, do you want to Google that or not or what?
Do you want to Google it?
She's like, no, not interested. Are we allowed to say that Michelle's here and Matilda?
Yes,
Do we acknowledge the other?
They're active participants.
Okay, in the other mammals in the room?
Yeah, exactly. A cookbook in America in 1796 had a bunch of pies in it. Only three of them were sweet.
Wow.
Yeah. Late 1800s, there's one that had eight sweet varieties.
Out of how many do we think? Like 100?
I don't know. Bunches.
Bunches.
1947, the Modern Encyclopedia of Cooking listed 65 different sweet pies.
Wow.
So, you know, America has gotten a sweet tooth over time.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Possibly because sugar was so much cheaper here.
It got cheaper.
Got cheaper.
You know, the more we colonized.
Yeah, exactly. Because yeah. we just enslaved people to make the sugar beets and the sugar cane and everything. Great. We're awesome.
Yeah.
Hooray us.
Great history. Well, I think, not to disparage your family, but the
Go
spires.
Ahead. We did all the wrong things, from the Indian taking the land from the Indians to owning slaves.
Yeah, I mean,
it's a very dark history and sad.
Yeah, the spires got to Virginia around the same time that your
really?
Family got to West Virginia, and they were from Scotland, and the first one here was a ship's captain, which
wow.
means only bad things in that era.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
So I feel
God, that's...
if you have any residual guilt, I feel it as well.
I have plenty.
It's pretty weird, isn't it?
Yeah, the sins of the father.
Right?
Yeah.
Exactly. And then on and on and on,
on
back
on.
To the early 1700s.
Yeah. Yep.
It's tough stuff. Anyway, on a lighter note, all these pie variations in America that have different names are from the Southeast. You've got cobblers.
Oh, yeah.
Crisps.
I love a cobbler.
Crumbles. Betty's.
Apple Brown Betty, yeah.
Sonkers.
Oh, I don't know that song.
Pandowdies?
Pandowdy. I know an apple pandowdy. I know about that.
Grunts?
Didn't know that one.
There's so many amazing words.
How about a dump cake?
Yeah,
y'all got
dump
a dump
cake.
Y'all gonna make a dump cake.
Is not that the most upsetting term for a food?
Yeah, it is. This isn't really a dump cake, but something else. My maternal grandmother, who was this amazing baker and cook, she became too disabled with Parkinson's to cook anymore. So my grandfather, who had never cooked a second in his life,
mm-hmm.
it was very much, he was the breadwinner. He worked in real estate. She was the housewife. It was very traditional.
Mm-hmm.
And they were very, you know, these very proprietous Presbyterian people. Anyway, but he stepped up and he started making all the food. And also, that's when he realized, I'm going to give you kids all these recipes too.
Mm-hmm.
But he had this one thing that I guess was a quick dessert they would make called French pie cake. And I also heard it kind of spoken as kind of a dump cake. It's literally like, and this went against his morals. I know you buy a box cake.
Mm-hmm.
I can't think of why are my words not coming? Because I haven't eaten. Just a box cake, you know, powder, what's it called?
Well, the powder.
The powder, yeah.
And then
box
you make
cake,
the,
mix.
Yeah.
Mix is the word I couldn't think of.
Oh, dear.
Because I mixed up. Box cake mix, put it in a pan, dump in cherry, apple, berry pie filling, mm-hmm. stir it all up and bake it. French pie cake. I don't know why it's called French pie cake. We were like, French pie cake, French pie cake. And sometimes I haven't done it in a while, but I'll still make a French pie cake because it's easy.
Well, if you add French to a phrase.
Fancy.
Exactly.
Oui.
Easy.
Yeah. Now, what is a song? Now, let's talk about these things, because
yes.
I have a problem with people. It angers me when uh-huh. I go to a restaurant or home and say, I made a cobbler. And I'm like, this isn't a fucking cobbler. This is a goddamn crumble or a crisp. My mother makes an amazing cobbler. It's got a full-on biscuit-type top.
Okay, so yeah, you have to tell us what cobbler means to you. Biscuit.
I'm very adamant about this.
Okay.
My mother's cobbler is a cobbler, and I've had variations that are more cake-like on top, and I'll accept it. But to me, a cobbler is the fruit is on the bottom,
mm-hmm.
hot, 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 delicious, fruity, gooey, yum, and the top is blobs of like... almost the same thing my mother would use for chicken and biscuits, a little bit, but a little bit different.
Yeah, well, biscuit dough, right?
And she would probably use Bisquick.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just like a really like dense, moist, but flaky biscuit situation.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not a crumble. That's not this fucking granola on top. An apple brown Betty is a different situation, equally delicious. Don't come at me and call it a fucking cobbler.
I love how opinionated you are about this.
It's strange to me because it's only happened to me in LA, and it just like...
Well, this is what I was going to say. I think because it's not part of the tradition of the West Coast,
yeah.
because I think growing up, I had quote-unquote cobblers that were crumbles.
Yes,
and
ma'am.
And we
did.
Call and crisps too. We use those words interchangeably. We have no history here.
You people, really?
It's we like, don't know what we're talking about.
Let me just say, go read Joan Didion. She'll explain it to you.
That's true.
The West.
She has a very good explanation of.
Yeah, but that's more Sacramento. That's more the northern part of the state.
Well, I think yes, but her later works about LA. It still gets
that's
into
true.
It.
That's true.
Okay, so for you, it's mostly the biscuit topping and no bottom crust, of course.
No bottom crust.
I mean, most of these other things were either kind of cakey, so it's like fruit and batter mixed together.
That's like French pie cake.
Yes.
A little bit.
Exactly, which I think that's a dump cake,
valid.
Really.
It's just. You literally dump it in.
Yeah.
Dump and stir. But so a dump charming. Cake also is that. Also, that cup of cake they talk about in Steel Magnolias, where it's a cup of flour, a cup of sugar, a cup of butter, a cup of eggs, I guess.
Wasn't it just 3 cup?
Is it?
They only say cup or
that's
something.
Yeah. You're right. Wow. Breaking it down. That's true, Clary. I don't know about you, but I had to take, didn't have to take, but we did. There was a home ec type thing in my high school called Singles Living.
Oh, my God.
It's so, it makes people laugh when I say it, but to me it's not funny at all, but like it was so boys could take home ec and not be gay,
you know,
not be
so
dirty
upset.
Homos. I've told my friends, it's like, you need to write a TV show called Singles Living. It's just about, and we learned how to make, it was Mrs. Ruth Whiteman was the teacher. She was also one of our 4-H leaders, and she was a character. And she had this sort of an accent, but she was from, and my parents would always say, I would say, where's Mrs. Whiteman from? They're like, she's from Lewisburg, which is down the state. Like, and she would talk like, I'm from Lewisburg. She was very fancy. And she was, like I said, a character, but we had to learn. It's where I learned everything about cooking. Because my mother was kind of like, get out of my kitchen.
Okay.
And to this day, the spoiled male in me is still one way. So my sisters, two of them are gay. They couldn't be more left, more liberal, more left wing, more feminist. So is my sister who's straight, who lives here. Not that gender matters. I mean, not that sexuality matters, but still, I'm just painting a picture. Still, the women take care of all the stuff in the kitchen and the men just sit there. Even my brother, Jimmy, who's an amazing chef. He's the kind of chef when you go to his house for Thanksgiving, he makes the traditional green bean casserole with the thing from scratch, though. From
not
scratch.
Not from a can.
Not from a can. He does his own onions and his own mushroom soup. All of it. It's amazing.
Wow.
That's that, brother. That's not me. It's like you'd think the gay one would be better cooking, but she's not. So anyway, my mother was always still out of the kitchen, so I never learned from my mother how to cook. And also my mother would make from scratch chocolate pudding. She would like stir it on the stove.
Oh my gosh.
For like 45 minutes. Honey, with that skin on top.
Yeah.
But then I should just mention, lest you think I was spoiled, very sparing with the food. We could only have a little bit of it each day. We never had soda. We had very, and there were 6 of us.
Portion control.
Very portion controlled, which made me probably led to my alcoholism and drug abuse, which I'm done now. 5 years sober.
What does that mean? Like you were just like, give me more, give me more,
give me more. Like always wanting the whipped cream, always wanting. I remember one time eating. Oh, there's another thing that was a big deal. Were cakewalks.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And the first
those.
Thing I ever won was cakewalk. Mm-hmm. I remember winning a cake at a cakewalk and always having a lot of cake around. And they were related to the, it was usually at church, these amazing cover dish dinners, which were like so amazing. Like
cover dish dinners, does that just mean potluck?
Yeah, it's what we would call a potluck.
Okay.
So people would be on Sunday night and everyone would bring a big casserole or chicken or whatever, or a pie or a cake to the church. And it was an amazing food. And I remember one time at, my mother, from a church sale or a cakewalk, from my grandmother, she had this cake, this angel food cake, and it was frozen, and she thawed it, and she didn't think it was up to snuff, so she threw it in the garbage. And I was like, why is that cake, that angel food cake, just in the garbage? She was like, oh, you can't freeze angel food cake. It didn't come back, or whatever she said. Mm-hmm. Don't think I didn't get down that garbage and fucking eat that shit. I remember eating it. I remember sneaking sips of Pepsi, the forbidden to the children that my mother would only have for herself.
Oh my gosh.
It is probably the thing that like you made, and like the, you know, we could only have a certain amount of cookies a day. Uh-huh. And we were all very thin.
Mm-hmm.
We mostly still are, but so there was that. But anyway, back to, what was I talking about? I just ramble, honey. I stream of conscious. I just
I like
through.
It. You have so many food stories.
I really do. Well, pancake. I mean, come on.
How you could
not
be
to
avoided.
Be corny, but it's true. No, I love a good like hush puppy. I was back in North Carolina at this beach vacation with the family, and I hadn't had a good hush puppy in so long, and it was so satisfying. And I remember this is so off topic for a second, but one of the best foods I've ever because I thought. maybe we talk about this. I planned ahead. Because like, I've been craving them since I had one. They used to have these fried shrimp sandwiches in Merle's Inlet when I lived in South Carolina.
Uh-huh.
And they were like fried shrimp smothered with honey butter and then on a bun. It was so good. Just like so much carbs. Yeah. And then you would have hush puppies on the side. It was so good. I miss those.
Man, Southerners eat.
They do.
It is serious business.
Crazy. It's crazy. I don't know what that is. And it's different than the Midwest stuff, which I haven't spent that much time in the Midwest. And there's that whole like casserole and weird food culture in the Midwest, well, but it's different.
If I can just make something up entirely.
Sure.
The Midwest is colder.
Yeah.
The people who are not Native Americans had to travel farther. They were of hardier stock.
True.
More adventurous.
True.
Maybe not as needful of the finer things in life as the people who stopped on the coast.
That could be true.
I mean,
that
really.
That could be true.
And they had to eat more canned, you know, as these things came about.
Yeah, because, and there was more like we said, food and access to sugar and everything in the
South.
Yeah,
and I really do think that the Midwest, not to disparage them, but it is just a fact that they do use a lot of like canned food. Like the famous cherry pie of the Lakes region is, the recipes for it call for canned cherries.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So I just think it's just a cultural difference.
It's a canned culture.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. But, you know, things change over time. There was a guy who in 1859 wrote a dictionary of Americanisms.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
What year again?
1859.
Wow.
Yeah.
Pre-Civil War. Just pre-Civil
War.
Yeah,
just about. And he was, I think, recording for posterity. And so the way he defined the cobbler was different than what we think of as a cobbler today. Whole fruit.
Oh,
mm-hmm.
Not cut.
Yeah. You would just put the whole fruits in a pot, and then you would cover that.
And bake it?
Mm-hmm.
Cover it with?
With the dough.
Oh, so it was a dough.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. Just slightly different.
It's funny. Like, I will accept any cobbler, like I said, with some sort of a dough. It just, I guess that's the thing. It has to be a dough.
It has to be a thing, not the oaty, not brown sugary topping.
No, which is not, that's not a problem. It's just not a cobbler.
And let me make sure I get this right. Crisps have oats.
Oh, is
in
that
the topping?
Okay.
Crumbles do not.
Okay. What is a crumble? I mean, I can remember in my mouth what it tastes like and what it looks like, but what is that exactly?
Just fruit with some brown sugar.
So it's just brown sugar and stuff.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Maybe some nuts, perhaps.
Nuts. Yes.
And the flour to, you know, sort of keep it together.
Got it.
And
okay.
Butter.
Sure. But, oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty simple.
Yeah.
You know, simple to do. Actually, there's something called bird's nest pudding.
Okay. Sure.
And I think in a weird way, the thing I just described to you is the whole fruit.
Yeah.
Which even in the peach version of it, they wouldn't even take the pits out.
Oh,
wow. It was
kind
of just cooked fruit with something on top.
Why not?
I know.
Just,
so weird.
Were knives at a premium? Can they not just, you could knock it open and pull that pit out.
Exactly. So bird's nest pudding is like that.
Oh.
So I think that's what cobbler once was, and then cobbler became something
else.
Got
it. It just
evolved.
Bird's
nest pudding is the holdover.
Got it. Got it.
And apparently it's sort of like a French clafoutis. Where just
a clafoutis.
Oui.
Oui. Okay.
Clafoutis.
What is that?
That has a more of a custardy texture.
Yum. Okay.
There is more eggs in that. Yeah.
Got it. I'm down.
So, Betty was something that you
apple
knew
brown
about.
Betty. I remember even that was one of our school lunch desserts. Apple brown Betty.
Mm-hmm. It's a very simple and inexpensive dessert.
Okay.
Do you remember what your school, what they had in it?
Roughly, but then I remember they also had a glop of like some sort of whipped topping on it too, which probably doesn't happen now in schools. I remember very specifically what it tasted like,
yeah?
But I don't remember what it was.
So I think at their simplest, it's just torn up bread with the apples and cinnamon and
that
butter.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Just extremely simple. And there was a book written in 1890. The Practical Sanitary and Economic Cooking Adapted to Persons of Moderate and Small Means.
Oh.
What a fun little read, huh?
That'll put you in your place when you at the purchase counter.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, you're of low means.
Yeah. And it was teaching people how to cook on a budget.
That's smart.
Basically.
I could use it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And that was one of their signature desserts. And there was even a restaurant.
The Apple Brown Betty was.
The Apple Brown Betty, because it was so inexpensive and easy to do. There was a restaurant in Boston called the New England Kitchen at the end of the 1800s. I couldn't figure out exactly what it was, but their mission statement was to improve the food choices of the poor.
Wow.
Very paternalistic.
Very.
In the way that America is. And I imagine it was like a part cooking school, instructional, okay, inexpensive food type of thing.
But it wasn't a restaurant. It was a...
I think you could buy food there as well.
Okay.
But I'm not totally clear, but I'm sure it was paternalistic.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Other kinds of fruit-based desserts. The grunt.
Okay, it's funny. I was just going to say, let's get back to grunt.
Yeah.
Because tell me what that is. I don't think I've heard of it.
So this one is not baked in the oven. It's cooked on the stove.
Okay.
And it's actually similar to a cobbler. It's topped with dumplings.
Okay.
It's just cooked on the stove.
I've seen that. Mm-hmm. Like I've seen in a cast iron skillet, mm-hmm, sort of the same thing. I can picture that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, is it pones anywhere in there? That's more of a cornbread situation.
Yeah.
I remember like when we lived in the southern part of West Virginia before we moved to where we moved later into the house my father grew up. It's a long story, but but we lived down more near the coal camps earlier. My daddy was a minister and he had a church down there for a while. So the cooking there was even more country.
Mm-hmm.
And it was also delicious, but I remember knowing and learning the difference between a pone and a cornbread.
Mm-hmm.
I know a pone is made in a cast iron skillet, and it was more savory, and cornbread was more sweet.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, there are savory cornbreads now, like Martha Stewart's, which I've made.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, Martha, stay away from
it. Do you consider it an abomination to put, like, jalapenos in cornbread?
No, I don't. I have no problem with that here.
Okay.
Was it Cobalt, which is now Malo? Anyway, there was this restaurant over here in Silver Lake that had a really good jalapeno cornbread. I don't mind it at all.
Mm-hmm.
It would be weird to have it in the South.
Okay.
But like, I don't mind. I mean, now I used to really not like spicy food when I was little, having been raised on incredibly bland food.
Right.
But my taste has evolved a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't mind that.
Okay. So a grunt apparently is named for the sound it makes as it's cooking. Isn't that weird?
What would that even be?
Like the fruit breaking down kind of, and then the steam under the dumpling part kind that of kind of like
bubbling.
Pops out.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
This is the theory. I've never made a grunt myself, so I can't speak to it.
Maybe it's time.
Yeah. And then there's the slump.
Okay, no.
Now, the slump is named because it sort of slumps down as it cooks.
Oh, it kind of like... Isn't drops.
It? Yeah, yeah, it exactly. And this is also let me make sure that I'm getting this right, I believe. This is also a stovetop dessert.
Okay.
And Louisa May Alcott talked about an apple slump in Little Women.
Okay, maybe that's where I've heard it before.
Maybe.
It sounds vaguely familiar.
Yeah, and that was yeasted dough.
Okay.
Spread across the top.
And that's why it would deflate, because the yeast would just like drop down instead of rising.
Yep,
rising.
Exactly.
My mother would make this really good thing called Sally Lund bread. Have you ever heard of Sally Lund bread?
No.
These things are such a tattoo to my brain from my childhood.
Uh-huh.
But it's, and I've seen it recently in like magazines. It's like a cake, but a bread. I can't even...
Is it one of those sort of moister breads?
It's a moister bread that's like almost in a bundt cake. I remember she made it in a, like, not a bundt, but like just a
round.
A round with a thing in the middle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So like the bundt cake pan, but without shapes on the top.
Exactly. Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
But she would make it, like, we would eat it as a bread. So it's Sally Lund bread, but it was almost, oh man, she gave us, God, thank God, she gave us all her recipes, which I have in a folder at home, if I were more ambitious, and cooking is so much science, which I'm not good at, and so much math,
mm-hmm,
and you have to have the right tools, but I really, this is making me want to like make a Sally Lund bread, because it's not something you can get post-made it over to you.
Right, you should.
I should try.
Yeah, give it a shot. Absolutely. Sonker.
Sonker.
Mm-hmm.
This what do one you think is that is?
Super specific. Apparently, it is only made in North Carolina.
Wow.
In Surry County, North Carolina.
Very specific.
Even they have a festival every year, a Sonker Festival.
What is it?
It is deep dish pie.
Sounds good. I'll take it.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And not everyone, sometimes when people who go to that festival that are not from Surry County, they go there and they say, well, this is just the same thing as a cobbler. And of course, the locals are like,
go crazy.
Don't you How ever.
How dare you? Get the fuck out of Surrey.
Yeah, exactly.
But I'm cursing a lot. Is that okay?
Oh, we love it.
Okay.
Yeah, we already have the explicit tag up on iTunes, okay, so we're good. Covered.
Fair enough.
We're all absolutely right. covered. Yeah, and I guess they say it's an Appalachian term, which I don't know what that means because... Well, maybe Appalachian is a language unto itself.
Well, it kind of can be. Like, I'm Appalachian. Like, that's West Virginia, too. So mm-hmm. that means it's in the western part of North Carolina, up mm-hmm. in the mountains. Yeah, I don't know that one. I do now.
Yeah, now you do. There's a buckle.
A buckle I've heard of.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
It's kind of like a coffee cake.
All right.
But just fruitier.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, and they buckle in.
Okay.
There's a lot.
I think I've had a buckle. That yeah. sounds familiar.
Yeah. A lot of these names are onomatopoeias, you know?
Yeah.
Like, for either for the sound that they make or what they do when they're being
Interesting.
Cooked. A buckle. Which, actually, that isn't an onomatopoeia, but you got what I mean.
I understand.
Now, would you consider a shortcake to be part of this family?
Like a real traditional, like, whatever that is, like Scottish shortbread?
Well, like the strawberry shortcake, the individual serving ones with the biscuits. Because someone online said it was like an individual portion of cobbler. But I don't know if I'm buying it, but what do you think?
They said a shortcake is an individual...
So, because, you know, it's the biscuits.
Yeah.
But you get the one biscuit in front of you with the fruit just piled in
yes.
between the two and then the whipped cream
right,
on
right,
top.
Right, right.
So
yeah.
they think it's, in their mind, it's an individual cobbler.
Well, it's a shortcake. How dare they? yeah. It's just strawberry shortcake.
Yeah.
And you can have other shortcakes. But like we would do, I remember my mother, we would have shortcake. She wouldn't always make the actual shortcake, mm-hmm. which is like shortbread and mm-hmm. that very specific thing.
Yeah.
But often people would get those things at the grocery store for strawberry shortcake, which were like little pound cakes.
Yes, I remember those with
cakes.
The little thing cut out of the middle.
Yeah. Which isn't really a shortcake, so people got fooled.
Right.
But yeah, shortcake's a shortcake. I don't think you can, no.
Yeah, I don't buy it. I think it's too much of a stretch. And also because strawberry shortcake is all about how delicious and amazing that
these fresh strawberries
are in the season.
And it's in May.
Yeah.
When the strawberries come out, ideally.
Whereas all these other desserts are like, this is about to turn, or this is
yeah.
never going to get ripe, so you cook it to get the flavor out of
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
So I think it's just a totally different usage of ingredients.
Not, yeah, yeah. The berries aren't cooked with the crust, right?
Right.
So it's not the cobbler.
Yeah.
Next.
Agreed. Pandowdy.
Pandowdy. I remember having those. Apple pandowdy is the one I remember. And it's like a cake when the stuff's in the middle and it kind of is squished up on the sides, sort
mm-hmm.
of a situation.
Mm-hmm.
They're all just different versions of like an apple cake.
I know, they really are. And I feel bad for it because its name is Pandowdy, and apparently that's because it's not too
beautiful. Oh, that's really
yeah,
the thing.
Yeah.
It's not like someone like, you know, Maggie Dowdy made that.
yeah, no, apparently it really is because of its humble appearance.
Oh, wow, interesting.
Yes,
okay.
I thought so. Now, all of these... I think are desserts to be honored, even though shortcake
sure.
is something different.
Mm-hmm.
We'll put that aside, but these are all good quality
yeah,
American.
It's just a way of putting delicious cake or biscuit type things together with delicious fruit and sugar.
Yeah.
And I'm sure different county, like the Sunker, they made it a tiny bit different. Like, no, this is us. We have an
yeah.
identity around this.
Yeah,
don't,
exactly.
Don't mess
we
with
have a
it.
Whole fucking festival.
Exactly. Don't ever question us.
Yeah.
We are Sunkers. So it's all a version of that. Like, you
yeah.
know, a lot of ways, like French pie cake, of dumping fruit and crust together and
yeah,
mixing it up. And
exactly.
it's all delicious. And throw some vanilla ice cream on there.
I
and
did,
everybody wins.
Yeah, absolutely. There's one that Serious Eats put on this list of crumbles, grunts, etc. that I think has no place here.
Uh-oh.
But for cultural reasons.
Let's talk about it.
Boy bait.
What?
I know. First
B-O-Y.
Of all.
B-O-Y. Is this like how to catch a man?
Yes.
Oh, gross.
Isn't it gross?
/ tell me all about it. I need some, girl. I said I was single. I don't be cooking for one no more. Boy bait.
Well, okay.
Ugh.
Here's the thing that just like freaks me out all over the place. Okay. 1954 is its first appearance.
Mm.
Made by a 15-year-old Chicago teen.
Oh, wow.
Here's what I don't get about the 1950s. Is that it's the era of sock hops, dances, 15-year-old
mm-hmm.
girls creating a dessert, calling it boy bait, and winning the Pillsbury Bake Off.
Wow.
With it.
Wow.
And they weren't supposed to be fucking?
Oh, my God.
It's such a disconnect that I just can't.
Well, I think they were sometimes.
Well, of course, everyone always has.
Yeah, exactly.
But you really weren't supposed to in
the '50s. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was that, you know, how things got so conservative. Yeah. The Eisenhower era and all those. This makes me think of all those now hilarious but troubling, like short films or instructional films or things about how to dress for your husband.
Yeah.
You know, always wear pearls and heels and have your nails freshly polished or he will leave you.
Right.
You know,
it's exactly. That same Which mindset. Is true.
It is.
Yeah. But
thank you for wearing your pearls and nail polish,
yeah,
or I would have to stomp out.
Dressed up for you today.
Michelle's only in like a full ball gown, so she really matches it too.
It's important to her.
Mm-hmm. Well, she wants a boy, doesn't she?
She has one, and he's like 6 years younger than her.
Hot. So get it.
Set.
She needs to tell us about your boy bait.
Baked chicken.
Oh, there you go.
Baked chicken. Roasted chicken.
I thought she was going to say bourbon.
Yeah. Seriously, whatever it takes, right? So, yes, that one I'm saying no to just because it upsets me.
What is it? What came out of my mouth.
It?
What is it?
Fruited coffee cake. So it's kind of like a buckle.
Okay, yeah, like an apple coffee cake.
Yes. Oh, and you know what? I'm sorry. She didn't win the bake-off. She came in second.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Well, specifically, hers had blueberries in it. Named in honor of its powers with the opposite sex.
Wow.
Okay, what? Again, I just can't wrap my head around it. The powers to do what? Like, what are we saying
with this? To, like, he will become your man and you'll date him now?
And then dating, what?
I don't know.
The 50s were a lie.
It was absolutely a lie. Well, it was like the era my parents were raised in,
mm-hmm.
and then even though they're still married, like one of the jokes is that they had six of us when we moved into Mill Meadow, which was like where my father grew up, which is this giant estate.
Mm-hmm.
They had to have field hands, you know.
Yeah.
We worked that property, and then it's for sale if anyone wants it. Because all of us, like, we're like, should we take this? Like, no, can't do it.
If one of the Smart Mouth listeners buys your property, I will be elated.
Hey, write into me, the Sam Pancake at Instagram or on Twitter. I will give you the realtor information. It's an amazing 32-acre property with a 22-room house with a barn. It's
that
on the river.
Lovely.
I'll show you pictures. It's absolutely gorgeous. It needs some work, y'all. P.S. on a floodplain.
Oh, dear.
So good luck getting a loan from a bank. So it may be in the family forever.
Oh, well, probably one of the grandkids will have.
That would be amazing.
Yeah.
That would be amazing.
Be good at that sort of thing.
And I wish I were the gay who could be like, me and Trevor, my boyfriend, are going to move back and open a bed and breakfast and a wedding event property, which all the family weddings are there. It's gorgeous.
Mm-hmm.
And it used to, Mill Meadow in its history, which it was built in 1799, the base part of it, it was an inn at one time. So you could have a bed and breakfast. I just don't know if it would work there because it's, I don't know how much, like, it would, to pay for itself, it would take a lot of money, you know? So I think a farm is probably a better idea. Some income. Or if someone had this, was independently wealthy and could float it. But it's an amazing property.
Yeah. So, Sam, where can people find out about all your shows? And
like I said, you can follow me on Instagram, TheSamPancake, all one word, and on Twitter, @JSamPancake. And you can follow me on Facebook. I'm open to the public. I'm not taking any more friends because it's just
Did you hit your
enough.
Max?
I haven't hit my max, but I'm trying not to. I'm like at 43 or 4,400, and I want to keep that for people that I actually know.
Oh, okay.
But you can follow me, and all my stuff's public because I want people to come to my shows. And then I do a podcast, too, called The Gasp, which with Gio Andy and Sam Pancake, he's my best friend, but he's half my age. He's a millennial gay. I'm a Gen X gay. And we interview my celebrity friends, basically.
And then
just talk about our lives.
That sounds great.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. Now I'm hungry.
That'll happen.